from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on this morning's Forum program, we'll check in with Kevin Yamamura of the Sacramento Bee about more bad news from California Governor Jerry Brown on state deficits. Then we'll zero in for the hour on the upcoming first statewide election since California voters created the top two primary system. The two candidates with the most votes on June 5th, regardless of party affiliation, will move on to face off in the November election. What kind of impact will the new system have on the state's political landscape? Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. We're going to spend this hour discussing California's new top two primary voting system, which makes its debut on June 5th. But first, we want to get a beat on the warning from Governor Brown's office that the state budget deficit is much bigger than his office estimated in January. Governor Brown made the announcement in a YouTube video released over the weekend.
Tax receipts are coming in lower than expected, and the federal government and the courts have blocked us from making billions in necessary budget reductions. The result is that we're now facing a $16 billion hole, not the $9 billion we thought in January.
Well, the governor will lay out his new spending plan later this morning, but we want to check in on what we might be hearing from Kevin Yamamura of the Sacramento Bee, senior writer for the Sacramento Bee. Kevin, good morning.
Morning, Michael.
Well, I guess this is nothing but bad news. I mean, presumably it's going to mean more cuts in welfare, health care, and to state workers, won't it?
Yes, that's what we're hearing. I mean, the governor said, as you mentioned with that YouTube video, that the deficit had grown from about $9 billion to $16 billion, which was quite a jump.
And how does he account for that? I mean, it certainly makes his estimates look off the mark here, and Republicans are saying it's because of a $4 billion windfall that didn't arrive.
Well, certainly there had been warnings in the last couple months from fiscal analysts suggesting that the governor was too optimistic in January, that California relies a lot on capital gains from wealthy taxpayers, and they're very hard to predict. So the governor had chosen optimistically in January, and the April tax returns were not as strong as he had hoped for.
Well, it's a setback for him, obviously, as well as for the state. What are we going to hear, do you think, in an hour or so when he comes forward with his new plan?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, a variety of cuts. We expect additional cuts in health and welfare. You mentioned the state worker piece. We've understood at least a 5% reduction to state worker pay. He's also, I would imagine, he's going to propose cuts to higher education, additional trigger cuts.
Furloughs?
It could be in the form of furloughs.
Well, I guess the big question here is why aren't we talking about the tax system?
Well, the governor does have a $9 billion tax measure on the November ballot. He's qualifying that. He submitted the signatures last week. He's going to the voters to ask for a slightly higher sales tax, as well as a higher tax on wealthy earners.
That's going to be on the ballot, and there will be another measure possibly on the ballot from a millionaire lawyer. But I'm really wondering, when I say the tax system, we've done programs on all the money, for example, that Apple and other companies don't get taxed for because they have places in Reno or abroad.
Sure. There has been a lot of effort by Democrats to try to look at the corporate tax system. And that's also a component, I believe, of this additional deficit, that they didn't predict those corporate tax revenues correctly either. So some people are calling for that. As you know, California has a two-thirds requirement to pass any increase in tax, and that would even include changing some of those corporate tax laws.
Well, we'll wait and hear from the governor on this. Kevin, thank you so much. I just want to get a beat on this, and you've provided it. I'm appreciative.
Thanks, Michael.
Kevin Yamamura is senior writer for the Sacramento Bee, and we are going to go into talking about the top two primary now. We're going to shift gears here, as I said earlier. Regardless of party affiliation, the top two candidates in the June open primary will face each other in the November 6th general election. And this will be the first primary of its kind since California voters created the top two-tier primary system by a 54% approval of Prop 14 that was passed back in 2010. This means the abolition of traditional political party nominating primaries for all state and federal races except presidential and party central committee contests. Local contests are not covered by the new rules and candidates. And under the new primary, candidates can state their party preference on the ballot or opt not to have it included. So in this hour, we want to turn our attention to the state's new June primary. And joining us to do that is John Fleischman, GOP strategist, publisher of the flashreport.org, website on California politics. Welcome, John Fleischman.
Hey, thank you for having me on the program, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Steve Peace, co-chair of California Independent Voter Project, which authored the Top Two Candidates Open Primary Act. And he's a former California Democratic legislator called the architect of this. Word usually reserved for Karl Rove, but good to have you, Steve Peace. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's begin by, sort of talking about what you expect as a result of this. Some are saying that we'll have completely different results, and some are saying it's just going to protect incumbents and the results are going to be minimal. What do you anticipate?
Well, the second comment is sort of interesting, coming from all of the interest groups that historically reinforced the process that has failed to oust essentially any incumbents over the last decade, and in which there have not been any competitive congressional campaigns. Open primary has already succeeded in creating 10 times as many competitive campaigns as we've seen in the past election cycles. You know, in one breath, the partisans complain about the increased cost because of the competitive campaigns. In the next breath, they invent this notion that, it's incumbent protection. Look, bottom line is that open primary means competition. Competition means a healthier system. Hopefully, ultimately, both major political parties as well as the smaller parties respond to that competition, and we see an environment in which the political parties themselves become healthier, stronger, more intellectually relevant, and reconnect to a society that candidly has walked away from the party system. I want the parties to be more vibrant, more competitive, and more connected to the governance process. Right now, they're empty election machines.
So unlike most elections, candidates are going to have to appeal across party lines. That could change, really, legislative culture. In other words, GOP is going to have to think about maybe taxes. Democrats are maybe going to have to think about getting tougher with labor unions.
Well, I think there's a tendency to look at this kind of backwards. The first thing open primary does is it increases turnout, and it means that the outcome of the election is going to be determined in November when the most people vote. Right now, in the old system, 95% of candidates were elected in the June primary. Of that 95%, more than half were in June primaries where there were more than two candidates in their primary, and they were elected with pluralities. For example, the Speaker of the Assembly first got elected with about 4,200 votes. He's now the Speaker of the Assembly. There's nothing wrong with that. That was the way the system worked. But that didn't even represent a majority of the Democrats in his district, let alone a majority of the voters in his district, let alone a significant statistical representative. And that's why you get this sort of bizarre process in Sacramento, because the truth is you take the 73% of Californians who say that partisanship is at the root of our problems. We're run by the other 27%. And the members of the legislature in a closed primary environment, members of Congress in a closed primary environment, are responsive to the 27%. What open primary does is make us responsible to 73% of people who are just normal folk who are trying to make a living and are not obsessed by politics, don't show up to party conventions and lock themselves in an auditorium and act crazy once every 4 years.
But if you have more people you have to appeal to, doesn't that mean there's going to have to be more money in politics?
Well, think about what you just said. If there's more people that you have to appeal to, do we want the criteria to be, let's appeal to as few people as possible so that we can save money? The truth is, the amount of money being spent is probably going to be comparable in the past. It's going to have to be spread over more elections, and that means less money per election, but more elections. And look, at the end of the day, if we're getting again, it's the conundrum. On one side, they'll complain and start wanting money. The other side, they'll say it's not good. You can't have it both ways. Pick an argument and stick with it. The bottom line, democracy is about participation. Our firm belief at Independent Voter Project is that you get the best results when the most people participate. Independent Voter Project, Independent Voter Network are about voters. We're not about candidates. We're not about political parties. We're not hostile to candidates. We're not hostile to political parties. But somebody's got to advocate for the individual voter. Our old system conferred rights to voters who were willing to join political parties that were superior rights to those that we got as voters. And you ought not to get any different right simply because you're willing to join an organization. And at the end of the day, the more power we give that individual voter, the more information we give that individual voter, the better results we're going to get in the system. And then you step back and you look at the overall scheme of things. Does anybody think things have worked well under the old system?
Steve Peace, again, is co-chair of the California Independent Voter Project. What do voters need to know, Steve Peace, when they enter the ballot box? That's different.
Well, I think the big surprise that we have in this cycle, we didn't really expect the number of independent candidates. There are some very competitive, particularly in the congressional races, independent races. And the terminology they're going to see on the ballot is party preference. None. Those are the independent candidates. Now, at the end of the day, that's part of the element of competition. As I pointed out, we're not about those candidates. We're about the voters. But that may spark additional interest, and the more higher those turnouts are, the better. In June 2010, with our Get Out the Vote program, we were able to increase independent turnout by 419,000 people. That was a 30% increase over the prior year and a 90% increase over the prior gubernatorial year. It'll be interesting to see what the level of participation is. We are at IVN.us conducting the country's first online voter preference survey. In fact, it opens up today. You can look at it if you go to IVN.us and see, how it works. But voters in three key congressional districts, the 10th, the 26th, and the 52nd, have all been sent unique pins, all the independent voters, and they'll be able to go online and vote and express their preference. This will be the first time that independent voters will be able to express their support. We actually opened up the process. The official opening is this morning at 6 a.m., but over the weekend, right as we opened it, we've already had more people participate in that process than participated in both the Republican and the Democratic voting process.
Steve Peace is with us by line this morning, co-chair of the California Independent Voter Project, which authored the top two candidate open primary, and he's a former California Democratic legislator. John Fleischman is a GOP strategist, publisher of the FlashReport.org website on California politics. And John, Governor Schwarzenegger, a Republican, had a lot to do with this movement to bring this into fruition. And John Burton, a Democrat, said it's the dumbest thing the legislature has done in 175 years. I guess it's your contention that both sides don't seem to see this as being very productive. But one could argue that that's because political parties are being hurt by this, including third parties.
Well, I mean, the first thing that I would say is that I don't think that political parties want fewer people to participate in the process, all due respect to Steve Peace. The more people that participate, the better. And I agree with that goal. But, you know, as a practical matter, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Proposition 14 has a lot of bad effects. It was written to do three things that we think are very, very bad. The first of which is it was purposely written to disadvantage political parties in the process. I don't care if you're a major party like Republicans or Democrats who are now literally forced off the ballot. We can no longer easily have all of our Republican or Democrat voters in California pick a nominee. We're now kind of stuck in the back room trying to figure out who our nominees are going to be without the benefit of being able to give broad consensus and input. So one of the things you're going to find is that because of Proposition 14, the major political parties are going to have much fewer people involved with the process of picking our nominees. And to some extent, that's kind of the exact opposite of the goal of the stated intent of the authors. But Steve Peace kind of glossed it over and made it out to sound not like that big of a deal. But as I watch the practical application of Proposition 14, the amount of money that it takes to compete now is just absolutely staggering and stunning. And the effect of that is that I am watching the special interests from Sacramento, whether it's the labor unions on the Democrat side, whether it's certain business PACs on the Republican side or major donors, are now weighing in and coming into these districts, and they are going to cherry pick and they're going to pick candidates because candidates can no longer effectively communicate in what was a primary. Because the way the system used to work was you campaigned vigorously for your party's nomination, and then your party helped you in November when you had to talk to a broader group of people. And it's, I think that it's not practical to assume that a candidate who is not affiliated and not connected with a political party is going to have the resources to communicate in November from the party. Remember, the parties are all about ideas. Instead, they're going to be forced to go to the labor unions. They're going to be forced to go to a lot of the people that want something out of government. And obviously, the other piece of this is that third parties like the Libertarian, Peace and Freedom, Green Party, they no longer get a candidate on the general election ballot at all under this scenario. You know, the Republican Party kind of grew out of nothing. It was not an original party in the United States. Under this not new system that Arnold Schwarzenegger championed, you're never going to see another rise of third parties. Maybe you'll have a rise of this kind of rush to no party at all, which I think is a disservice to the American political process, which has a proud tradition of citizens joining together under common beliefs and helping people to get elected through those common beliefs. I will just kind of conclude by saying that under the way that the state constitution is written, it's not going to be very long before only Republicans and Democrats appear on the presidential ballot in this state, because you only get on the presidential ballot by virtue of the percentage of the vote you get in the general election for the gubernatorial election and the previous presidents in the previous year. And by this system, only Republicans and Democrats will qualify.
Well, you're saying that it's going to cost more money and it's going to do damage, particularly with respect to what political parties have served voters for and citizens for in the past. But what about the almost certain increase in voter turnout and the fact that over 20% of the state electorate has no stated party preference? So independents are going to, well, be more involved in the process, aren't they?
Well, I mean, I can only tell you this, that it's the Republicans and Democrats both opt in to allow declined state voters to participate in their primary. So right now, every independent voter out there has an opportunity to cast a ballot for their favorite Republican or favorite Democrat candidate. That has not changed. What has changed under this system is a system that says that no longer are voters going to be able to choose from a candidate of each political party in the November election. That choice is being taken away through a system that says that only the top two vote getters move on in November. And we think that's a terrible system in America, because every political party should have the right to be on November, and every voter should be able to have a broad selection of candidates to choose from. And under Governor Schwarzenegger's proposal, you may be in downtown San Francisco looking at two Democrats on the ballot, or you may be in the heart of Orange County looking at two Republicans on the ballot. And that's not a system of choice. That's a system of manipulation by people who don't like political parties.
What about the argument, though, John, that it makes, for better legislators, because the legislators are more beholden to the people, not to the political parties?
You see, and what I'm seeing as a practical application is, because of the expense of this system, the people are more beholden to the special interest than they are to the political party. I'm a former officer and a former executive director of the state Republican Party, and I can tell you that the influence of our party is about ideas. We reject the influence of corporate welfare in Sacramento and labor unions in Sacramento, so we think the influence of political parties is a good thing. But when this measure peels back the influence of political parties, who steps into the vacuum? Our labor unions, big corporations with all of the money. And no longer does the guy who just believes what he believes can rely on his political party to help him. Now the only moneyed interest out there to help people are the people that want something out of government. And it's a terrible system. And I should probably add that I think that the bulk of competitive races that are taking place in this year are not due to the new open primary system. They're due to a new redistricting, which has led to a lot more seats having more parity in voter registration. So I think that it's a little bit of a license on the part of Mr. Peace to say that it's the open primary that has caused a bunch of competitive races.
John Fleischman, again, is GOP strategist, publisher of the FlashReport.org website on California politics. And let's bring another voice into this. Laura Wells was 2010 gubernatorial candidate from the Green Party, and wanted to hear from her, particularly in light of the fact that some of those who have been critical, like John Fleischman, have pointed out that you could get they point to Louisiana, where David Duke slipped into the gubernatorial runoffs. Fringe candidates could slip through if moderates were divided in their vote. And I suppose from one perspective, Laura Wells, that might be a good thing, not to compare the Green Party, obviously, to David Duke, but that third-party candidates could do better. Yet at the same time, some are saying this, means little hope for third parties.
Well, historically, what it has meant has been little hope for third parties, because what has happened is that it has strengthened incumbents and highly funded candidates when you look at what has happened in the state of Washington. But I do believe that there is a possibility, and that's because times are changing and people are really, with the Occupy movement, with a 99% language, people are realizing how much the two, what I'm starting to call them, the Titanic parties, because they're heading straight for the iceberg, but how much they are dominated by the corporations, by the 1%. And so the possibility is, because anybody can vote for anybody in June, that if everybody voted for their values in June, And basically, Green Party values are California values: social justice, the environment, grassroots democracy, nonviolence. And then there's a possibility that Greens could be in one of the top two spots, and then people would have a real choice in November, not just one corporate-funded party as opposed to the other corporate-funded party, not just one rich or incumbent candidate running against another equally rich and well-funded candidate. So I do believe that there is a possibility for that, especially. I mean, what happens is that things change a little bit, and then a lot, and that has happened in other countries in this world. And that can happen here, where people go, wait a minute, I am not over a barrel. I don't have to vote for these parties that are showing me nothing, that are not doing what they say during the campaign. Let's go to someplace that's not controlled by the 1%.
Laura Wells, 2010 Green Party candidate for governor. Glad to have your perspective here. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll get your perspective as listeners, in fact, as citizens. So we'd like to hear from you about this in the first statewide election since California voters created the top two primary system. The two candidates with the most votes on June 5th, regardless of party affiliation, will move on to face off in the November election. What do you think about this new system, and what kind of impact do you think it's going to have? And are you in favor of it? Are you opposed to it? Do you feel good about it, positive, optimistic, or do you think it's just same old politics and more money into politics? Any questions or comments you have are welcome. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your call, so feel free to join us. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We spoke earlier this hour with Kevin Yamamura of the Sacramento Bee, just getting a beat from him on the governor's plan to lay out essentially a new plan with respect to the budget deficits. There are more than had been anticipated. And we're spending this hour really talking about the top two primary voting system, which makes its debut on the 5th of June. And regardless of party affiliation, the top two candidates in the June open primary will face each other in the November 6th general election. And this will be the first primary of its kind since voters here in California created the top two primary system by a 54% approval, Proposition 14, back in 2010. Steve Peace is with us. He co-chairs California Independent Voter Project, which authored the top two candidates open primary act. And he's a former California Democratic legislator. John Fleischman, a GOP strategist and publisher of flashreport.org, website on California politics, also with us. And we spoke with the gubernatorial candidate of the Green Party. And let's find out what your thoughts are on this. Phil, we'll go to you first here. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the program. I'd like to know what San Franciscans are going to look like in terms of assembly and state senate and also the federal government. Who's going to be on the ballot this year? Is there Leland Yee going to have a seat and Mark Lennon going to have a seat? It's very confusing to me. And regarding the first part of your program, is there any discussion of imposing taxes on the oil companies? I've heard the drilling in states and other states require taxes, but in California, the oil companies pay no taxes at all. Is there going to be any change in that law?
That's come up time and again on forum, and it has constantly been proposed by many Democrats in the legislature. So far, the two-thirds necessary has not been viable. But let me go to you, Steve Peace, on the first question that the listener brings up. John Diaz, of the San Francisco Chronicle, had an editorial, and he was talking about assembly candidates here in Northern California. Michael Breyer, son of Steve Breyer of the Supreme Court, and Mark Levine, who probably would not have had a likelihood of doing much had it not been really for the primary that we have in June. I mean, pretty much that's the way you see it, isn't it? Did we lose? We lost Steve Peace. John Fleischman, can I get you to comment on that?
Well, I mean, again, my position relative to this system is that, you know, that it's kind of a rejection and a repudiation of the party system, and obviously I'm a proponent of it. I believe that in the absence of political parties bringing together people of like mind and like idea to try to influence politics, the vacuum left with the absence of political parties becomes the special interests who want to buy and control politics. I mean, the representative from the Green Party made it out like the political parties themselves have been corrupted. And I can't speak for the state Democrat Party, but I can speak for the state Republican Party. We're certainly not dominated by corporations. We're dominated by grassroots activists all around the state who want to put forward good ideas about how to govern the state of California. And I know a lot of people on the state Democrat committee who I don't agree with their ideas, but they're passionate grassroots people. I think it's a folly to believe that you could somehow take politics out of politics. The question is, what's the best political system that you can have? And the one that's been devised by Arnold Schwarzenegger and was passed on the ballot is one that moves aside the political parties and welcomes in the direct support of the labor unions and the corporations. And I think that when it's all over, the voters are going to realize they made a big mistake.
Let's go back to the history just for a moment, though. It's true, isn't it, that might have never gotten on the ballot if it hadn't been a deal worked out between then-Governor Schwarzenegger and Abel Maldonado?
Well, as a practical matter, this issue got on the ballot because there was such a voracious appetite for tax increases, and Abel Maldonado said, I'm not going to put up my vote, my deciding vote for the largest tax increase in California history, unless you put this on the ballot. And all of the unions and all of the big corporate welfare folks were all driving towards higher sales, income, and car taxes, and they were willing to pressure other people to put this on the ballot in return for it. I think actually the story of how this got on the ballot is a great story and an indicator of what we have in store, because it was the unions didn't oppose Proposition 14. The big corporations supported Proposition 14. If this was so bad for unions and so bad for big companies, wouldn't they have come out against it like the political parties did? No, if you look at who funded Proposition 14, it's the very same special interest that Steve Peace is trying to exclude. Says he's trying to exclude from the process, and I don't buy that for a minute. If Proposition 14 was bad for the big unions and bad for the big corporations, they would have opposed it, and they didn't.
Let me go back to Steve Peace. We lost you there for a moment, Steve, and I wanted to actually, you can respond to what John Fleischman just said, but I want to get your response also to a caller who asked about the effect this is apt to have perhaps here in Northern California. And I had mentioned that John Diaz did a piece in the Sunday Chronicle where he was talking about candidates for assembly who probably would not have had a chance had this primary not been in the works.
John misstates. First, he said earlier that both the Republicans and the Democrats under the old system allowed independents to vote in the primary. That's absolute false. The Republican Party, his party, did not allow independents to participate in their primaries, and they still don't in the presidential primary where we're still operating under the same rules. The second thing he said was false is that this would not have been on the ballot had Abel Maldonado, the legislature, not put it on the ballot. Independent Voter Project had already submitted it to the Attorney General's office. We had already raised the money to put it on the ballot. It was going to be on the ballot no matter what. The third thing he said that was untruthful is that the labor union supported this. They not only opposed it, they funded, CSEA funded a lawsuit challenging title and summary. They participated behind the scenes funneling money into the lawsuits that have challenged it since. Finally, this notion that the political parties are the fountain of all truth and justice. Where do you think the political parties get their money? They're nothing but laundromats for the very labor union money and corporate money that Mr. Fleshman talks about. And Mr. Fleshman, as a former party official, was one of the chief money launderers. And everybody involved in politics, all of us have money coming from all these so-called special interests, labor unions, corporate interests. We all do. And so what you just heard from John Fleshman is and he knows it's all silly and it's all button pushing, and the Democrats push the buttons on their side and the Republicans push the button on their side. You heard him make his keynote references to tax increases and this, so that's the Republican buzzwords. And the Democrats will do their silliness. I'll go back to the comment I made earlier. 73% of real people believe that the problems in our system are due to partisanship. Real people in the real world understand this. It's only those of us in the political class that are behind the times. And you see it in particular with the attitude of young people. The parties have already left them. And we, as the folks who have really messed up the system, have it at least some responsibility to attempt to recognize this disconnection between our society and our political class. The parties aren't going to fix it. It's not in their interest to fix it. They're competing to try and throw open primary out. Their front people like Mr. Fleshman, who I have a lot of respect for as a political operative. He's a good guy, and he's a good guy. But John really believes that the core organizational democracy ought to be from the fountain of the political party. I believe that the core operational unit ought to be the individual. And I do find it rather ironic that Republicans who claim to be champions of individuals will embrace this groupthink that believe and embrace a Supreme Court decision that said the right of private association of the political parties is more important than the right of individual rights of the voters. At a minimum, John, I would hope you would join us in our federal lawsuit in which we are going to file a lawsuit and challenge the use of taxpayer dollars for private elections of political parties. If you're going to embrace and hide behind this notion that political parties ought to be able to make their own decisions and control that outcome, then at least you ought not be using taxpayer dollars to do it.
Steve Peace, we've got a lot of people who want to chime in here with calls, and I want to give John Fleshman an opportunity to respond to some of it you've characterized as untruths. But I have to go back to the initial question I asked you, which is what kind of effect you think this will have, say, if not necessarily here in Northern California, throughout the state. You really think that some of these more obscure candidates have a much better chance now?
Well, it's not a matter of obscure candidates, but I think, as the representative of the Green Party said, for the first time, for example, third-party candidates, there's going to be some areas in Northern California where you could end up with a Green versus a Democrat, and you'll have a truly competitive race. There will be opportunities for you're still, nothing's changed in the fundamentals of politics. You need to have name identification. You need to have community roots. But what will happen most importantly, and this isn't going to happen overnight, nothing magic is going to be different in November. This is a gradual process. It will see what we look like at the end of the decade. But I experienced a brief time with open primary as a legislator, and the same people got elected, but their behavior changed. And the best way I can characterize it to you is they acted more like adults. And that's what we're really looking for. We're looking for a legislature and a United States Congress that acts more like adults.
All right, I've got a caller here. I just want to put you on, Paul, because you think that the top two is going to hurt the third parties. Why?
Yeah, well, if you look at the reality of it, the Green Party member and the Peace and Freedom Party are united in trying to sue to overturn Prop 14. That's one point. The other point is that look at the statewide race, like Senator Feinstein, do we really think that Marsha Feinland of the Peace and Freedom Party has enough money to spend statewide to be the second candidate to compete in November with Dianne Feinstein? I don't think so. So I don't think it's going to help at all. And, you know, and with all due respect to Laura Wells, she really should be pushing the fact that the Greens and Peace and Freedom have many more progressive reforms to talk about, like proportional representation. The other issue, of course, money in politics is hurting us, and lack of media access. You know, is Marsha Feinland going to get invited to debate Dianne Feinstein on national TV or statewide TV for the Senate race? I don't think so. We need to have, you know, the corporate media opened up so that Peace and Freedom Party, Libertarian Party, Green Party can be in those debates and get those ideas out to the public. Right now, the media is bought and paid for by the same interests that are benefiting from the corruption of the system that other people are pretending doesn't exist.
You mentioned Senator Feinstein, Paul. You know, according to her campaign manager, Bill Kerik, this is not confusing to voters, and you've got 23 people running against her.
Right, and I'm saying the ones with the money are the ones that are going to rise to become the top two.
All right, let me read some emails here, actually. Joseph writes, it seems to me that primary elections are a waste of time and money to begin with. Why not just have all the candidates for all parties face off in November instead of slimming the field early on? Think of all the money we'd save and the increase in voter turnout that we'd have by holding one single election. Francis writes, the speaker just said that the Democrats and the Republicans have opened their primaries to voters who registered to vote as independents or with no party preference. In fact, the Republicans closed their primary to these non-affiliated voters for this election. Only the Democratic and the American Independent parties are allowing crossover voting by these voters. And another listener writes, I thought the top two provision did not apply to the presidential campaign. Doesn't it? That's the case, isn't it, Steve Bees? It does not.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, I just want to get that on the record.
Still under the old
system. Yeah.
And another listener writes, isn't your real worry about the open primary, the candidates who the right wing of your party, this is directed to you, John Fleischman, and you can also respond to some of the things that we heard from Steve Bees. Isn't it that you're more concerned about the rhinos that would actually win in Republican-leaning districts?
Yeah, so
Republicans in name only are rhino, yeah.
A couple of quick points. First and foremost, and eventually Steve and I are going to end up agreeing on this point, after the United States Supreme Court threw out the first kind of version of an open primary it was passed in 1998 or so, was thrown out in the early 2000s, the legislature passed a law allowing the state's political parties to allow declined estate voters to opt in if the political parties chose to do so. The Democrat and the Republican parties both have, since then, for now four election cycles until this year, allowed declined estate voters to vote in every race but president, which this initiative doesn't cover the presidential race anyway, and that's because the national political parties have said that the delegates don't get seated from a state that allows non-party members to choose its nominees. So it's not fact to say that Republicans excluded declined estate voters from participating in their primaries. It's actually, for almost a decade, been a fact. The other issue that I think is important to stress is that the reason why this measure limits voter choice, the reason why third parties especially should oppose it, is in the November general election, we are never going to be able to hear the voices of the third parties ever again. Only in June, in that kind of primary area, are you going to be able to hear from third-party voters. In November, it's always going to be the top two. It's either going to be two Democrats, two Republicans. It'll be a Democrat and a Republican. But you won't see Peace and Freedom, Libertarian, Green, any of those folks on a general election ballot. Maybe you could see a candidate who expresses no party preference if the stars line up in a particular way. But for these third parties, this is going to be the end of their ability to participate in a general election discourse. When their candidates for president are campaigning around the country for a November election, you know, when the Libertarian candidate is running for president, when the Green Peace and Freedom candidate is running for president, there will be no corresponding candidate of their party for their voters to choose for local partisan office. It won't exist.
A couple more emails here. Courtney writes, I feel really torn about this new system. It seems very limiting in all the ways we've heard about, and yet there is a sense of possibility in it as well. My only hope is that if it doesn't work, we will be able to be wise enough to change it. And Scott says, the two parties have accomplished nothing but gridlock and debt. It's time for a change, and this won't make it worse. Let me go to Santa Rosa. Stephen, join us.
Yeah, this is Stephen from Santa Rosa, a lifelong Democrat. And I think this open primary is a good idea. But it does have its downside. And its downside is that as a Democrat, I will be able to sabotage the Republican Party nomination because I would vote for somebody who I would think would be a true idiot in the Republican Party, knowing the person can't be elected, knowing the person in my Democratic Party probably will be elected. And for me, not to be a registered Republican, being able to sabotage that Republican Party is not really a good idea. But I think overall the whole thing is a good idea. And Arnold would have never been elected if this wasn't an open process.
What do you think about the idea of sabotage, John Fleischman, that the caller raises?
You know what? I think that there's a small group of people out there who, you know, kind of Machiavellian see their opportunity to weigh in to party primaries, but to be honest with you, if the caller's a Democrat, he's never had the opportunity to vote in a Republican primary, and if the caller was a Republican, he's never had an opportunity to wade into the Democrat primary. Independent voters, the Klein Estate voters have had an opportunity, as I said, to weigh in as they choose, and I think that generally people weigh in to support candidates they like. It's only weird, bizarre, Machiavellian people who say, I'm going to go in and try to monkey with who the other party puts in. The good news for the caller is, by and large, under the system, you can still go in and vote for candidates that you don't like if you want to. As a matter of fact, you probably have more opportunity than ever. But, I mean, as a practical matter, I think that kind of behavior and voting pattern is more about cynicism and gaming the system.
Well, we didn't, Steve Peace, you and John Fleischman have both been reluctant, I can understand that, to predict exactly how this is going to affect California politics, although you're much more positive, obviously, John much more pessimistic about it. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the one paradigm we have, which is up in Washington. There seems to be, at least from that experiment, not necessarily a strong perceptible change, has there?
Well, folks in Washington are very happy with their open primary. In fact, it enjoys over 80% approval rating by the voters. In fact, in every single state that have embraced open primary, the approval rating of the voters is higher than it was in the vote that brought the open primary there. And let me say, I totally agree with John. In fact, we've done some extensive focus grouping polling on this issue of voters. It's hard enough to get voters to go out and vote for the candidates they believe in, let alone get them to go out and think through the Machiavellian notion of voting for somebody they really hate. The statistical a group of those folks is less than one-tenth of 1% of total voters.
So what do you think about this overwhelming approval in open primaries that we see in states like Washington, John Fleischman?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not an expert on public opinion polls from other states, so I can't really speak to it, but I can tell you that I think that if there is some enjoyment from people out of it, it's going to quickly wither and fade when they realize that these open primaries are really serving to empower the special interests in their states. And I think that over the long haul, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it, and you just may start to get more and more candidates that care more about what the special interests think and less about what the people think. I think that Steve Peace, to be fair, and again, he's a great guy, brought up a very good point. I believe in the party system, and I believe that if you've got a problem with the political parties, let's fix the parties. I don't believe that the solution is to try to minimize and throw out the roles of the parties, because, again, without political parties bringing people of common belief together, you're going to end up with a hodgepodge of, in theory, if you got the world that Steve Peace wants, you'd end up with a hodgepodge of legislators in Sacramento with no common beliefs whatsoever. Nothing will ever get done. And I, for one,
believe in my party, and I would, you know, someday like to see my party in a majority in Sacramento and actually implement its ideas. Obviously, John Burton would like to see his party implement its ideas. The reality is, Steve, the independent voter is all over the map, and you're going to end up with a state legislature that has a new kind of gridlock. It's the gridlock of lack of common purpose.
Who was it?
Well, let me agree, John. I do agree. I agree on that. But I also want to see those parties be effective. And I believe, look, we all benefit from intellectual competition, the same way the marketplace from honest and even-keeled competition. You have to remember that the two political parties and their lawyers have competed for the last 75 years to rig the election rules to keep competition, intellectual competition, ideas out of the marketplace. That's why you see these two parties that are just fundamentally empty vessels. They're nothing but money raising machines. And John, to talk about special interests as though somehow the special interests aren't the actual elements behind the parties. You know as well as I do that the interest groups that fund the Democratic Party and the interest groups that fund the Republican Party. And now we have a bunch of legislators and Congress members that overwhelmingly salute to one side or the other because that's the methodology by which to get reelected.
Steve Peace, let me break in here because I want to identify the fact that you're listening to Forum and we're talking to both Steve Peace and John Fleischman. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio, so for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. I'm sorry, Steve, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you have
some? No problem.
Let me go to some more callers on then, and we'll go to Ev here. Ev, you're on.
I really appreciate what you guys have been talking about. I really like what's coming up here on the primary system because it's going to give a voice to a lot of different opinions coming in. And I very much appreciate also what your guests and other speakers have been talking about, which is the fact that there is a drought of new ideas and a vibrancy in our political system. My main question is, do we really believe that there is an evolution going on here in terms of getting voter mechanisms in place that will bring more voters out and have a major participation of the American public in this voting system? Or is this just going to be drowned out because you have a certain price of admission to be able to be a candidate, and that's to have a lot of money? And will we ever be able to overcome that? And those are my two questions, so I think we can
Steve overcome Peace. That. And in fact, at IVN.us, we're beginning to build the platform to make that happen. I believe this will be the last presidential election cycle in which television and the mail are the dominant methodologies by which candidates communicate with the public. The internet is the place to go, the low cost, low barriers to entry. We are going to actually roll out a reform proposal after November that includes eliminating all these special privileges that the political parties have in terms of special mail cost privileges and whatnot, and move the elections to the internet. That's part of what our online voter survey is demonstrating today that we'll have a press conference on later at 11 o'clock. The ability to conduct the dialogue, if you will, to bring the community of political participation onto the internet dramatically reduces costs. It virtually eliminates those costs so that candidates can be exposed to voters, communicate directly with voters in an open forum environment, talk about issues comprehensively without the time constraints and the space constraints that are inherent in television, newspapers, and even here on a radio environment. So I'm more optimistic, and the thing to be most optimistic about is look at our younger people. When you look at voters under the age of 45, they have a totally different view of looking at politics than us old farts do. We are coming out of the era of messengers, where we had trusted messengers. Young people are looking for what the message is. And yeah, John, you know, they are going to be in a different how you and I would view issues as a hopscotch. They may be very, what you might say, liberal on foreign policy, but very conservative on fiscal issues. They may be very socially moderate or socially liberal, but very conservative on other issues. And yeah, you've got to talk to them about those different issues. And as opposed to going through this nationalization of campaigns where you have this ridiculousness where the Democrats right now are going to try and convince everybody that the Republicans are engaged in a war on women. And the Republicans are going to try and convince everybody that the Democrats are the The Democrats are going to break the bank, and we all know it's all rhetoric designed by polling and focus groups. Create an environment where the dialogue is broader. Create an environment where there's more competition, and the young people are already there.
Let's get a final word from John Fleischman because we're running out of time here, John.
My final observation is that I am watching Proposition 14 get implemented as we speak, and as a practical matter, the candidates who are all about ideas are getting beat because of the enormous new costs that are associated with Proposition 14, and I think that you're going to see a lot more people going to Sacramento that are beholden to the corporations and the union.
Well, that will conclude it. Bring us to the end. I want to thank Kevin Yamamura, who was with us earlier, senior writer of the Sacramento Bee, and talked about Governor Brown's, soon-to-be-delivered speech about budget deficits. And thanks to John Fleischman, GOP strategist and publisher of the FlashReport.org website on California politics. Thanks also to Steve Peace, co-chair of the California Independent Voter Project, which authored the Top Two Candidates Open Primary Act, the former California Democratic legislator. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. And we remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling our listener call-in response line at 415-553-3300. And you can continue this discussion by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. In the hour ahead, we're going to go to a different subject, as we usually do from between 9 and 10. We're going to talk about the sounds of nature with Bernie Krause, who has recorded an extraordinary number of sounds in nature, of habitats and of different critters. Forum's executive editor is Raul Ramirez. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Judy Campbell and Tina Lauerberg, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. I reverse things just for the heck of it here. And I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.